Hey, Dave.
Hey, Greg.
How's it going, buddy?
It's going pretty good.
Yeah.
Things are all right. How about yourself?
It's pretty good, I have to say. I enjoyed surfing the internet this morning.
Oh, you surfed today?
I did. I got on my boogie board and I belly surfed the internet.
Was Keanu Reeves there?
He wearing an ex-president's mask as
no
he ran away
kidding.
From a bank. Yes.
Surfing's a source, man.
Mm-hmm. Johnny Utah, right?
Johnny Utah.
If you're going to surf the web, you're going to want to go to sites that look good
mm-hmm.
and that have all the things that you need that are user-friendly. You know what those sites are called? They're called successful sites. Do you know how you build a successful site?
I think I know, but I don't want to sound dumb and say the wrong answer.
What it's with it? Squarespace.
I knew
the
it.
Future is coming. Make it brighter with Squarespace. It makes it easy to turn your idea into a unique website. You could showcase your work, your blog. You could publish content. You could sell products and services of all kind in just a few clicks. You can customize everything, the look of it, the feel of it, with their settings and products using beautiful templates created by world-class designers. Again, if you're going to make your own website, make it look good. Make people want to come and visit it and spend time on it. If it looks like a tripod site from 1997, no one's going to want to go. No matter how many text things you make blink.
You've ruined the word tripod for me because now I think it's an HRO when you say the word tripod.
There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code PUCKSOUP, PUCKSOUP, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's PUCKSOUP, the code, and squarespace.com for the free trial. An error. On the show today, by the way, Patrick Elias from the New Jersey Devils, who was wearing a beautiful black and gray camouflage sweater and wearing smart guy glasses when we interviewed him.
Wait, it was camouflage? What makes that camouflage?
It was a camouflage pattern. It was like a pattern of camouflage.
Yeah, it was like horizontal stripes, wasn't it?
No, I thought it was a camouflage. I thought he looked like Firefly from G.I. Joe with the nighttime camouflage, the gray and black camouflage.
Your references get more and more Seth MacFarlane every day.
My references get more old guy every day. I think it's the
This reminds me of an episode of Taxi. When Danny DeVito says to Christopher Lloyd, bleh.
Hey, Lois, remember that time we interviewed Patrick Elias and he was wearing a camouflage sweater? Cut to Patrick Elias jumping out of a bush. Ah!
Hi, I'm watching Growing Pains. That's an 80s thing, isn't it? You and Jimmy Fallon, you should write for a show. You probably got some 80s bits.
Today's episode of PuckSoup is also sponsored by the adrenaline-packed epic Blade of the Immortal, the 100th film from legendary director Takashi Miike, director of 13 Assassins. Certified fresh by Rotten Tomatoes, get the jaw-dropping, no-holds-barred masterpiece that critics are calling one of the most viscerally energetic action flicks. Blade of the Immortal is available now on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital HD from Magnet Releasing. And now enjoy the show.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense.
I'm Dave Lozo of Mostly Vice Sports. I'm done. That's it.
And I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, and you're in Puck Soup. Yay!
Yeah.
We have an audience
of one.
Of one.
Yes. It's like an old Garbage Time episode where you just have like two people in the room that will just laugh at our jokes, so there's like a response.
Yeah. I hope that there's booing and cheering throughout the podcast as well.
Here's why the Rangers suck.
Boo. Look, we're both really tired. We've been watching a lot of the Olympics.
Yeah.
Beyond the hockey. Which, by the way, is very... I realized I counted it up. I've had 45 minutes of sleep in the last 4 days because I've been watching all of the hockey. That's a lie.
Well, not all the hockey. It was actually great that the U.S.-Canada women's game last night was on at 10.
Yeah.
I was... You know what's funny is I still can't figure out what is on what network.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh... Like, people will be tweeting like, oh, great shot in curling. And then, like, I rifle through all the channels and I can't find where they're watching it.
People are watching it on digital because, like,
yeah.
Remember what... Are they even putting shit on, like, CNBC and USA Network?
I've seen some stuff on either CNBC or MSNBC, okay. One of those two. But yeah, like NBC during the day is still like, you know, Access Hollywood and shows.
My
and shit
Shark
like
Tank viewing at the gym has not been interrupted by the Olympics on CNBC. So I can tell you for a fact it's not been on there.
I mean,
here's the thing though. You're right. It's like, okay, So the hockey basically that I've watched has been at 7:10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Oh, you actually get up for it?
Yeah, I do.
Did you watch
it? I have to write about it. So
you got up for the Canada game this morning?
I wouldn't say I got up for it, but I did watch it. And then it's also at like 10:10 at night. And
that's, all I could 10:10 at night's fine.
Yeah, remember when everybody was like, oh, these Olympics, nothing's on at the right times. I've watched more shit happen live.
Well, hockey, though?
Well, Sean White.
That's noon over there, right?
Yeah, so, the figure skating. Like, there's been a lot of shit that's been happening, like, live to us.
But if it's not at noon, anything beyond noon, yeah, we're kind of screwed by.
But
if it's at, like, 3.
I just found it weird to be like, they're all like, oh, my God, you're going to have to brew a pot of coffee and watch these games. Really? Because, like, it's...
Oh, it's not just the hockey.
It's like at the same time ER used to be on NBC. It's like nobody complained about it being late then.
Wow, there's a reference.
Yeah, there's a reference. I was trying to think about what's on at 10 o'clock.
That's like when St. Elsewhere would come on at 9:45 back in 1983.
I was going to go like Grey's Anatomy, but I don't even think that's on at 10 o'clock. What's on at 10 o'clock? Name 3 10 o'clock shows on the networks right now.
I couldn't name 3 shows on networks. Yeah. Three shows at 10 o'clock?
Is Dr. Autism on at 10? Or is that... I think that seems like an 8 o'clock show.
What is Dr. Autism?
The guy... There's a show called The Good Doctor. It's a doctor, a surgeon who has autism.
Oh, that's a doctor that throws the ice on the coma patient and wakes up the coma patient, isn't it?
Was that what happened?
Is that on Fox?
No. You see, you're confusing Dr. Autism with Dr. Fucks. Dr. Fucks is on Fox. That's called The Resident.
Oh, he has a lot of sexual intercourse
that's
on the show?
That's the show where the doctors all fuck. And also, Christopher Pike... from the Star Trek movie is a
how often do we reference Christopher Pike on this podcast?
With a shaky hand. He has a shaky hand and we don't know if he's going to kill someone or not.
Oh, so he's like a doctor. Yeah. That's he's like an expert surgeon, but he has a hand thing now.
There's a doctor scale. On the one
who's
side,
Dr. Scale?
On the ones I was going to say,
so there's a Dr. Scale, a Dr. Autism and a doctor.
I didn't want to say spectrum because we're talking about Dr. Autism. There's a Dr. Scale. On the no, oh, you thought I actually no, there's not an actual doctor
like
scale.
He's weighing himself every
no.
episode.
Okay, so there's a doctor's apostrophe scale.
Oh, okay.
On the one hand, you've got the doctors who fuck, and that's your Grey's Anatomy and
yeah,
your
sure.
resident. Then you come to the middle, and it's like respectable medical shows, like
which
ones are those? ER, your Chicago Hope, your sort of like
Scrubs.
Soap opera y mm-hmm. show. Well, okay. In between Doctors Who Fuck and respectable shows is Scrubs.
Whoa. We are not going to disparage Scrubs.
It's not a ranking. Here, I'm going to draw you a diagram.
There's drama on there. JD and Elliot. You didn't know what was going to happen. Turk and Carla.
Doctors Who Fuck. Then we go over here. Scrubs.
I bet Scrubs had more fucking than ER.
Sure, but it's a comedy. I'm saying this is Doctors Who Fuck drama, Doctors Who Fuck comedy.
Wait, Doctors Who Fuck Johnny Drama? What show is that? I do not watch enough TV anymore.
Whoa, baby bro. I was in the ER and all of a sudden...
Looks like Vince is doing the sex. I don't know what that would be. I don't know what that would be in a doctor.
Yo, drama, show. You know what would help you land more nurses? It's tequila. God, what was it? We had a lot of Entourage riffs lately.
What are we
talking
about?
So Doctors Who Fuck, then Doctors Who Fuck Drama, Doctors Who Fuck Sitcom. Then you come over here to the middle... Respectable doctor drama.
Okay.
That's your Chicago Hope and ER.
Respectable doctor drama.
Then you
drama.
Come over here a little bit here. This is respectable doctor drama, but with weird shit. And that's House. House is there.
Okay.
And then at the other end of the spectrum here, the scale, is Dr. Gimmickry, where it's like a doctor, but he's blank.
Oh, like he's so Doogie Howser.
Doogie
he's
Howser,
like
Dr. Or... Autism, that's where you are. So... We go Doctors Who Fuck Drama, Doctors Who Fuck Comedy, ER, Chicago Hope, Respectable, then House, Extreme Medicine, then it's a doctor but a horse kind of thing.
I would watch that. Like a horse diagnosis, like, I got to go to the vet. Well, you don't have a pet. I know.
Doctor,
he's actually a horse.
Should we intubate?
Nay.
Oh, he never lets us intubate. It's the worst.
the horse is like doing like CPR to revive somebody, and he's like, "You shouldn't beat a dead human."
Dr. Clydesdale was the first in his class at Harvard Medical.
God.
Could you call it horse after like as a parody of House?
Well, you can be like, "Hey, I got a bad disc thing in my."
I get a bad hoof.
You have like a thing with your disc, so you have to go see Dr. Backstretch.
Well, he walks into the operating room, clunk, 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 clunk. What seems to be the problem here?
Those horses at medical school, they're all jockeying for positions. Yeah, baby. This is this is a good hockey podcast.
Oh, goddamn. Okay. So the Olympics.
The Olympics.
Are not...
There's no horses there this year.
I finally figured out what's bumming me out about them a little bit, and that would be...
Is it Canada?
It's that I'm watching all the USA games. I watched our proud U.S. women play valiantly in defeat against Canada. But the good news is that usually we lose in the prelims, and then we win in the prelims and lose in the gold medal game.
Exactly.
Which is we'll lose in the prelims this time and then win the gold medal.
Like if we outshoot Canada 42-19 again, I feel good.
Yeah, I mean, a little problem is that all three of Canada's goalies are really good. So I think that all of them can do that.
Is our goalie tiny? I feel like she's tiny. That second goal that got past her, that shitty short side blocker shot.
Yeah.
I feel like I didn't realize like at that moment I was like, oh, she's like Mike Vernon sized. But maybe she's not. I don't know. I can't tell anymore.
I think the argument you're making is that we should see if Gal Gadot has American citizenship.
Well, Gal Gadot would go in there and then like the game would be 45 minutes longer than it should be.
Oh,
and everyone
no.
would tell you the game is really good when it really is.
It would probably go to a shootout too because the ending will be very disappointing.
At the ending, you'd just be like, I don't understand why she's fighting that other guy. That guy doesn't make any sense. He doesn't really matter at all in this story. I don't get it.
So I found out that the impact that the NHL not being there is having on me is that the ancillary games that I might otherwise watch if they had NHL players on these teams, I don't give a shit about.
Like what?
Like a Sweden-Finland game with NHL players is super competitive and super fun, and I'm probably going to stay up to watch it. A Sweden-Finland game sans NHL players is Bjorg Bjorksen versus Yuri Mikko Leitensen.
It's all guys that sound like NHL players. It's like Louis Jerickson.
Right.
It's Louis Jerickson and Lats Sundin.
And then obviously Joel Lundqvist.
Yeah, Joel Lundqvist.
So that's really impact for me as far as like the NHL not being there is like I don't really care about the other parts of the tournament, just Canada and the U.S. and Russia, I guess, too, although I didn't watch that game because it was up against our game.
They lost, right?
Yeah, they lost to Slovakia and we lost to Slovenia, except no one expects us to win anything and Russia was 1-1 to win the gold.
So how do you feel like as a Brian Gionta enthusiast, how do you feel like him taking a crucial penalty against a garbage team with no NHL players will help or hurt his chances of getting that contract I keep hearing about?
I think he came up small.
More like Brian. Well, I never really put that together. Gionta is like giant with an extra letter in there and he's not tall.
He's not tall.
That's like an irony name.
It's an irony name.
Speaking of irony, I think a good sign that you have irony poisoning from Twitter is that you're pumped to see Pacific Rim 2. like what are you doing? Pacific Rim 1 sucked. It was a terrible movie.
It didn't suck, but it made the classic mistake that movies cannot make, which is
being bad.
Showing you another better movie within the movie that makes you want to see that movie.
I think we
talked about this before. The first 10 minutes, like the first 10 minutes of Watchmen are the best part of Watchmen, right? The montage and stuff.
Well, yeah, the credits.
Yeah, the credit scene.
If the whole movie could have been a two-hour music video.
The first 10 minutes of Pacific Rim show you this world where like we are building giant seawalls to keep the monsters out. The Jaeger program starts. Like it's this whole kind of like encapsulation of how we got to this point before we meet giant bland Charlie Hunnam.
We gotta stop putting that guy.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, they showed us this better movie, and I'm like, "Where's that fucking movie? Like, if this was a prequel that did all that stuff, I would be there." But it looks like a giant Power Rangers episode instead.
So, Pacific Rim 2 is like a prequel?
No, Pacific Rim 2 is definitely a sequel. Oh. John Boyega plays the son of Idris
Elba.
Cancel the apocalypse, Elba.
God, it was such a bad movie.
Yeah, Charlie Day running around with monster parts all over his body.
We got to make a movie with Charlie Hunnam, Joel Edgerton, and Olivia Wilde called Don't See This.
No, you son of a bitch. Joel Edgerton's a good actor.
He's in a fucking shit ton of bad movies, though.
Did you ever see the Gift between...
That was the most overrated hunk of shit I've ever seen, where Jason Bateman's the bully or whatever.
Maybe you just don't like what the product that Joel Edgerton is pitching you.
Joel Edgerton's really bad in Black Mass. He's been good in something. I know I've seen a movie.
He was great in
He's good in the fight movie with the Tom Hardy fella.
Right. But he's also good in the Star Wars prequels. He plays Owen Lars on Tatooine.
See, I don't know if that's true or not.
It is true.
He's in the Star Wars prequels?
He plays remember Luke's Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru?
Yeah.
He plays Uncle Owen as a younger Uncle Owen.
Young Uncle? Fuck off. Does he really?
That's him. He's got nothing to do in the movie.
That's it?
Like, there's a number of people that were in the prequels that had nothing to do but are super famous. He's in it. Keira Knightley was one of one of Queen Amidala's like doubles when she was a kid in Phantom Menace. Yeah, isn't that crazy?
But Keira Knightley was like, she was like in her 20s at that point, wasn't she?
No, she was still pretty young then. No, but you have to remember
that was like,
that,
like Beckham times.
Yeah, but she's from the same clone line as Natalie Portman and also Daisy Ridley, so she fit into that role perfectly.
Oh, because they're just white women with brown hair.
They all look the same.
It's weird how that
works
out.
They all look the same to you?
What, Natalie Portman?
Natalie Portman, Daisy Ridley, and Keira Knightley all look the same to me. Like they're from a cloning project. We're gonna create great actresses, but we're gonna put these two in Britain to keep them away from this one in the group in the States.
So like that new movie where what's her name is like a Russian, like not she's like the bad Russian version of Scarlett Johansson in the Marvel movies. What's that movie?
Oh, Jennifer Lawrence's new one,
Red Sparrow.
Red Sparrow, yeah, not Black Widow.
Right,
Red Sparrow.
Red Sparrow. Like there should be a movie where Red Sparrow fights Black Widow, like in a prequel before, like right.
Holy shit!
Wait, hold on. Delete this. We got to use that as a script. We got to write that down. But yeah, Joel Edgerton's, he's a good actor. He just has, like Olivia Wilde's a good actress, but I just feel like they're always in bad movies that I don't want
to impugn the legacy.
Olivia Wilde.
Who? The legacy of Tron Legacy.
What movie is this? Justin Timberlake. Oh, fuck. I don't want to see this. What the fuck? Olivia.
All right, so the Olympics are going on, but we would be remiss if we didn't talk about one of the most important things that's happened with relation to the Olympics.
Curling.
Which is an editorial stance that I believe you applauded when we talked about it yesterday.
It's genius.
Ken Campbell, our old friend from the Hockey News.
It's both stupid and genius at the same time.
Penned a story called "Why I'm Boycotting the NHL During the Olympic Hockey Tournament."
Fuck.
Ken Campbell has decided that he is boycotting the National Hockey League
for 12 days.
The league that he is paid to cover. Because they did not go to the Olympics. And again, like I think I said this on Twitter and I said it on the other podcast. I'll say it again. Please give me the Henrik Lundqvist for Erik Karlsson trade.
It's the trade deadline.
And then his editor's like, Sam McKay, my good friend from Yahoo, comes over to Ken. He's like, Ken, we need your take on this Henrik Lundqvist for Erik Karlsson trade.
Nope.
Yeah. Boycott.
Because the trade deadline is the 26th.
Yeah.
Is that right? And when do the Olympics actually end?
No, he's going to be his boycott will be done before the trade deadline.
But like Dion Phaneuf just got traded for Marian Gaborik. Yeah. That's a pretty it's not a great trade, but it's a trade worth talking about.
Starting at 12:01 a.m. on Wednesday morning, I'll be fucking imposing a fucking complete boycott of the fucking NHL until 11:59 on Sunday, February 25th, the last day of the men's Olympic tournament. As such, I will not write one word about the NHL, either in our magazine or on our website. He didn't say anything about Twitter.
But he says like it's for Lent, right? Because there's definitely like a religious component in there. So like if your bosses were to challenge you on it, you can just be like, oh, freedom of religion.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's like an Ash Wednesday Lent thing.
Another important date falls on Ash. This is Ash Wednesday. Oh, he's talking about giving it up for Lent.
Yes.
So he says it's like giving up something for Lent. But you're saying that you could pass it off as religious freedom.
That's what makes it so genius. Because like you go to your bosses and you say, hey, I'm not covering hockey for 12 days. You're like, whoa, 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 buddy. You cover hockey for a living. Why are you not going to do it? The Bible.
Yeah.
All right. Fine. Go do it. We don't want any trouble. Go write about Slovenia, U.S., and Canada, Sweden.
I should really start trying to use some of those obscure holidays that take opposite side of the street parking rules. It'll fitter. I have to. It'll fitter.
But like, what is this going to do? Like, no one...
Well, according to Ken,
I just don't get it.
The NHL is free to conduct its fucking business the way it fucking fits. But the owners, it's the owners' league, and they have had the right to opt out of shutting their businesses down for 17 days. I get that. But hockey consumers fucking have the rights of their own. They can vote with their feet, or in this case, their TV remotes.
As a call to arms.
But I feel like the attitude of most fans is, it sucks we're not at the Olympics.
Right.
But it's still the NHL. Like, I'm still going to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, what is not watching the Olympics or hockey for 12 days do?
I think the fatal flaw in his plan is that if you give up the NHL for 12 days, then you're basically giving up hockey for 12 days because you don't want to watch this Olympic nonsense.
It's in off hours.
It's like, not great hockey.
God bless Wojtek Volski, man. But, like, I'm not going to get up at 7 in the morning to watch him destroy Switzerland.
Like, it's... Rasmus Dahlin, the only guy that you're going to stay up to watch, got scratched in the first game.
He didn't play?
He was a healthy scratch.
Over who?
Well, they do
that. What is up with Sweden? They were scratching off Rekman Larsson at the last
Olympics.
That's
what I was going to say.
Is it the same guy?
Young defensemen get screwed by the Swedes. But that's the thing. Remember, they didn't actually scratch Rekman Larsson. They dressed him for the semifinal game and then kept him on the bench the entire time.
Dude, we talk about this all the time. I was just saying this morning. The best way to identify a bad coach is the coach that can't coach anyone under the age of like 23.
Right.
Like, we're struggling. What's wrong? I don't know. Shane Gostisbehere's a problem. Wait, what? Shane Gostisbehere's a problem?
Is this you trying to tell me? Is this a little Alain Vigneault lament?
Alain Vigneault's the worst at it, man. Yeah. Like he had Tony D'Angelo up for like 2 weeks to start the season and was like, you know what we need more of? Steve Kampfer. Like, that's a problem.
I'll say this about Ken's column. You know, I give him a lot of shit, but I give him shit out of love because he keeps life interesting in a good way. Not in like a Steve Simmons, I'm just a fucking willfully ignorant asshole kind of way. Like, Ken at least puts the work in to do these hot takes, and I always appreciate that. Like, you can smell it because you put the work in when you do hot takes.
What? I don't do hot takes.
Okay, thank you.
What hot take do I do?
I appreciate the stunt. It kind of makes me, reminds me of like back when like the local sports columnist in the newspaper would wear like a really loud jacket and be like, I'm not going to refer to them as to the Giants until they win two games in a row. Yeah. From now on, they're going to be the Littles. You know, it reminds me of that kind of like hokey stunt.
But at least that guy was still working.
I'm with you. Like, it's so dumb.
It's
so dumb, but it's so good. I'm not jealous that I didn't think of it because I think I wouldn't have done it on principle. Because I'm Team NHL in this dispute.
Right, but like, it punishes you, though, because then you have to get up at weird hours and write about guys you don't care about.
But does
it
even
watch.
Say he's going to cover the Olympics?
No, he's going to have to. I'm assuming the bosses were like, all right, fine, we'll do this. But you have to give us Canadian Olympic content, right?
I'm going
to
give Ken Campbell – I will buy him a fucking handle of whiskey if it comes out that he's doing this before a predetermined vacation that he was going to take to like Maui for 12 days.
Well, he comes back, he does like one trade deadline column, then bolts for like 2 weeks to like the Alps.
Like, oh, I need a break.
We see Ken at trade deadline. He's like tan. He's wearing a lei. Like, wait, what? Oh, it's a boycott. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't tell you where I was going to boycott it.
There's nothing in the definition of boycott that says I got to do it for my apartment. I can do it from anywhere I want.
That's the beauty of the boycott.
Like, did he write about the U.S.-Canada women's game last night or no?
I don't know.
Like, there's no like, oh, I thought you were looking at his,
God,
his
oh, man,
byline.
I hope that's it.
Click on his dealie at the top of the thing
Ken
there.
Ken Campbell, clicking on the link.
Like, there has to be a U.S.-Canada column from him, right? There has to be. Come on. Come on, Ken.
Team USA enters men's Olympic tournament with late Johansson on their mind. And then there's a story about the Lightning that I guess was written before the boycott went to effect.
So he's done some stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a goofy, wacky radio stunt and a goofy, wacky loud jacket local columnist stunt. And I think we had
beautiful.
It's like Platoon, how like I was born of two fathers, Elias and that other wacko. Sports journalism, hot takes, and hockey this week were born of two fathers. Kindly old Ken Campbell with a silly radio stunt. And Steve Simmons saying that mixed curling isn't a sport for reasons. Like, give me the Ken Campbell thing 5 billion mm-hmm. times before that idiocy, right?
Steve Simmons is just... Again, I'm somebody who's just enjoying curling because there's no real hockey to watch for me outside of, like, the U.S.-Canada round robin and the mm-hmm. U.S.-Canada gold medal game that will eventually happen. But, like, I don't... As someone who's just kind of parachuting in, like... Why is a boy and a girl playing curling together worse than like four boys or four girls playing? Like, what's the problem?
And why are we saying that they did? He made it seem like these guys spent a half an hour together, like they were speed dating or something, and then all of a sudden showed up at the Olympics as a team. Like,
yeah,
they've been curling since the fucking Clinton administration.
The bad boy of curling.
The bad boy of curling.
The bad boy of curling. The guy who
were bad boys. Remember, there was that one skater, Christopher Bowman, that came in the Olympics that one time, and he was like. He was like a dude who had like a mullet or whatever, and he was like the bad boy of figure skating.
Dude, the bad boys of Winter Olympics are the best.
Sean White's a bad boy of the Winter Olympics.
The bad boy of cross-country skiing. Mm-hmm. When he shoots his rifle, he twirls it first and then shoots it. Ooh.
What Olympic sport do you feel – are you surprised we're not better at?
How do you practice that? You're just like, hey – like if you want to practice curling, you go down to your local curling club and just throw some stones.
Yeah.
You want to practice skiing, you go to the slope. You got, like where are you cross-country skiing uphill for like 2 miles then firing a gun?
Yeah, Europe
– where do you do it?
Like I feel like – we were talking about this morning. We were watching the luge. Like I feel like – why are the European countries so good at the luge? I feel like if you ask Katie Couric, they would tell you that they use the luge to get from their house to their office.
Is that how
all the people in the Netherlands use speed skating to get from their house down the canal to their jobs.
Hop on the body of water that's frozen and get to work.
Yeah.
Well, no, what it is, I just think our best athletes play baseball, basketball, football, while other countries' best athletes play soccer, and then it's like Olympic sports. So that's how we wind up with like German pairs champions. That's how we wind up with... Like, I don't get why we're not better at curling, though. We seem to really not be as good at curling as we should be. We have northern states that have ice that have curling clubs. We have Minnesota. We can probably pull a gold medalist out of Minnesota. But no, Canada's got too much ice, man. We can't compete.
I don't know. I feel like we're good in the sports that we're supposed to be good in is how I feel. And we're kicking ass in snowboarding.
Well, yeah. Like Steve Simmons is like, oh, mixed curling is a made-up thing. Like, we kind of made up snowboarding for ourselves. Like, no one else was really – like, the X Games was kind of like our thing in the 90s. And then we were like, what if the X Games but the Olympics? And then it's like, oh, snowboarding. We got all these gold medals in snowboarding. I don't know. I don't care. I don't watch the snowboard. Anything – pretty much I watch the hockey. I watch the curling. I put on the figure skating for jokes.
Oh, come on. You love it.
I don't get it.
Well, I think the problem is that you haven't watched it enough. But you know what? If figure skating came to your town, I know the perfect way to get tickets for it.
I would love to know because I really would like to go get some tickets.
SeatGeek! The smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event, including what used to be the Campbell's Soup Stars of Skating or whatever tour that used to come through. Remember how the Olympics would happen and then there'd be like the skating tour of all the people that you were like,
oh yeah.
I remember thinking about that person three or four months ago.
They still do that, don't they?
You think they do?
I think so.
Well, if they do, then you can use SeatGeek to get tickets to such events.
They got
to
make money, these skaters. They can't just like skate for free for 4 years. They got to make some money.
Hey, there's a finite number of commentary jobs for them as well after they're done skating. Whether you're searching for a last minute deal or need the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. By far, it's the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets, especially hockey tickets. I could be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I instantly find seats. It's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever because they grade each ticket based on value to help you get the most bang for your buck.
The most bang? You can get your most bang for your buck when you go hunting, too. Get it?
Thank you.
Bang, the gun, the buck.
Yes.
The thing you shoot.
Right.
But you don't really need SeatGeek for that.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
In the battle of Flash Gordon and Mr. Rogers.
Oh, my God.
Clearly, this film gets the most bang for its buck.
I'm Greg Wyszynski.
I'm Greg Wyszynski. Starlog Magazine.
Oh, God.
I know. The only reason I thought of Starlog is because they're bringing back Fangoria. Remember, those were the two sides of the same coin. Like, Starlog was the sci-fi magazine. Fangoria was the horror magazine.
Oh, I thought Fangoria was like an Evan Longoria or an Ava Longoria like vampire fanfiction thing. I had no idea what Fangoria was. Hello, I am Evan Longoria. I am here to suck your blood.
And I am Eva Longoria. Blah, blah.
And then like Evan Longoria and Ava Longoria have sex, mm-hmm. but they're vampires. So
right.
They can't really have sex because they're dead.
No. Oh, come on. You ever see Twilight?
I don't understand. If you're a vampire, you're dead. So therefore, you have no blood in your body. Therefore, you can't get an erection. Therefore, a man can't really.
Yeah,
understand.
But you're dead, so it's always stiff. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every ticket price, from sports to concerts to comedy to theater. Best of all, our listeners, the Puck Soup listeners, get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app today. Enter the promo code SOUP. That spells soup. That's promo code SOUP for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And thanks again to everybody who sends us their pictures from the games to show that they were, in fact, there based on the Puck Soup discount on SeatGeek. So thanks for all that. Joining us now this week as a guest is something that's really cool. Now, we tallied it up.
Something?
The interview is something.
Oh,
not the person we talked to. We tallied it up, and we've only done two interviews previously with hockey players.
Previously, right.
So one was Brij Galov for that horrible interview that I did in Nashville where I'm like,
Putin, not so bad.
But what about Crimea?
What about Crimea? You don't know nothing about it. Here, let me talk Crimea for 20 minutes. You don't have any notes, so I'll dominate the conversation.
So that was one. And then the other one was that Austin McDavid interview that we did where we got him talking about meeting weirdos in the airports and video games and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that one.
I mean, awesome in the sense that, like, it's as good as you're going to get from Connor.
You never asked him any friends questions.
No.
He's a self-proclaimed friends genius. And okay. I feel like it's all talk.
We'll get Connor McDavid part due, the return of Connor McDavid. Since we're into recycling guests now with Ehrlich and Wilder and everything, we'll get Connor back on at some point.
Eliash was really good.
Oh, I never actually said who we're talking to. Patrick Elias.
Oh,
former New Jersey Devil.
It went on for a while.
Getting his number retired by the Devils.
Next week?
Yeah. He joined us for a chat at Prudential Center this week.
Yeah.
What were you going to say about Elias?
I was going to say he's retired, so he's not your typical player where he's just kind of being, you know, evasive and stuff. He had really good answers about, I would say, pretty much everything we asked him. He was a little evasive about Lou. I felt like he had some Lou stories, but he told a couple of good Lou stories about him coaching and interacting with him. And yeah, I thought he was fantastic. It's great. He's retired. He's happy. The thing that I will take from the interview that I will never forget is asking him about what he wants to do next and what he's enjoying most about retirement. And his eyes would just light up. And he just said, my free time.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
He is so happy about his free time. And you could just tell. He's just content in retirement.
Okay. Best of number game. Devil's roster. The sweater number is 26.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Patrick Elias is the best number, 26 of all time. Which of these players would be the second best in Devil's history?
Okay.
For their term as a Devil, not overall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Rocky Trottier, Mike Kitchen, Andy Brickley, Alan Stewart, Tommy Albeline, Peter Stastny, Jason Smith, Christoph Oliva.
See, it's Tommy Albeline, but he was 26 temporarily.
He was only 26 for one season.
Yeah, he was six mostly, yeah. So I don't know.
So he doesn't – that I would say it by default, Stastny, because Albeline's best stuff was under another number.
Oh, I thought Stastny was 25. He was 26?
He was 26.
Oh, I thought he was 25.
No, you made that joke yesterday. Remember when?
And then I thought I fucked it up because I was like, I thought he was 25.
Well, once and future Puck Soup guest Ardo Ocal was wearing what he said was a Patrick Elias NHL like 94 style T-shirt.
Yeah, with a star on his feet.
And it's all pixelated and Lozo's like, that's a Peter Stastny T-shirt
because it has Elias as a center. I don't know if he was ever a center at that point.
They tried to make him a center for a little bit,
but I don't think he was ever a center in like NHL 97 or anything or NHL 98.
No,
I don't know.
All right. Patrick Elias was fucking awesome. You're going to love this interview, and we'll be back right after this.
Let's get to it, because you have a limit. You're wearing the ring, and that's so great. Okay. You have two, though. Which one do you choose?
It depends what I wear. This one is, like, probably the second time I have it since we got it.
Yeah. That's cool. Where do you keep them? Lock and key?
Safe. You wouldn't know my code?
I don't trust safes. I feel like when I go to a hotel and I put my passport in a safe, I feel like someone's just going to take the safe.
Probably.
They're very small.
It's like 26-26, right? Come on, we know it.
Let me ask you about when you were a player, did you like going, being in games where there was a number retired or a banner raising? Were you on the bench seeing this is a beautiful moment, or you're just like, I wish this would stop so I can play the hockey game?
No, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the moment. It's special for those guys. Obviously, at least you see how special it is for the individuals that are being honored and their families and their fans, and you kind of admire that and hope maybe that'll happen to you maybe at some point.
What do you miss most so far in retirement?
Oof, nothing.
Really?
No.
Nothing?
No, not
come
really.
On.
No.
You were skating to come back at the very end there. You wanted to come back and play some more. There's no part of that?
Yeah, but I made the right decision not to.
Yeah?
I was ready. I still probably pick up hockey, you know, twice a week with the retired guys back at home in Czech, in Prague, and I enjoy that, and that's about it. I cannot even think of being in a competitive league.
Like the everyday grind, you don't miss.
No, I got time to, you know, to hang with kids and family and travel a bit and do skiing and stuff like that.
I remember talking to Lidstrom about that, about like, as you get older, you know, the amount of time you have to put in to get your body in NHL shape increases. And Lidstrom was a machine, right? I mean, he's a different kind of guy. But like, was there a point where you were just like, I don't know if I need to get back on the horse for this anymore, as far as trying to train for coming back and stuff?
Well, the physical grind for me was kind of enjoyable, actually.
Yeah.
To get in shape. It hurt more to play and get out, but the preparation and to get in shape, I enjoyed it, actually. Even when I was coming back after knee surgery last year, I enjoy coming here 3 times a week and just getting on the ice and sweat and do the stuff, you know, being around and all that. But I didn't want to do it 7 times plus, you know, a week. But to me, it was more just that knee issue that I had that kind of kept me away. Otherwise, if I was healthy, I would probably play.
What about that year, though? What if there was a playoff run that year? Was there any chance?
Not really. No. It wouldn't be fair to those guys, you know, that played the whole season, and I don't know if I would be helpful.
Yeah.
Our good friend Sarah Baker was mentioning to us that you helped learn English by watching the Ricky Lake show. Is that true or false?
True. True, plus Jenny Jones. They were one after another.
So you get done. So it's like after you get done with practice, come home,
relax a little bit, have lunch, relax, and then I think it was from 1 to 3 or 2 to 4. Mm. Ricky Lake and then Jenny Jones.
Mm. So you learned those words like skank, custody.
I got those important words down pretty quickly.
That was your exposure to America. Was talk shows?
I didn't know any better. I didn't know what it was. I didn't understand it. You know that the whole concept of the talk show enough to know, you know, how bad of a show I was watching. But to me, it was easy because they were repeating the same kind of a lot of the words, you know, one after another, and most of the time, so that it was easy for me to remember those.
But like you said, I mean, like your first exposure to Americans is that we all cheat on each other, and we have no idea who our parents are.
That's Jerry Springer's.
You like come to the rink and talk to the guys. You're like, hey man, you see this guy on TV? He's got two girlfriends and two.
Is that normal here? Hey, I love it.
What was it like when you were a rook? Because you came from Kladno to Albany, right? First, I think was.
Yeah, I was in Albany for almost the whole 2 seasons.
Was it culture shock, or is it sort of the same deal that's going on back in the Czech Republic?
It was way better. No, it was hockey wise. I knew what I was trying to get into. I knew what the North American style of hockey, what it's about.
Mm.
I played with the junior national team against some of the Canadian teams in tournaments, etc. And I like playing on a smaller ice, so I know it's different. Mm-hmm. But culturally, the way they took care of me, I didn't speak, like I said, I didn't speak any English, so it wasn't probably easy to have me on the team.
Was there another Czech guy on the team at that point?
No, I was by myself.
Oh wow,
Krzysztof Holiwa was, which he was from Poland.
Oh, the Polish hammer.
Yeah, the Polish hammer and the Polish Młotek. Exactly, the Polish hammer. But he helped me actually a lot because the Polish language was quite close to ours.
That's so funny.
So if I didn't understand something, he kind of said it in his language, which I translated to mine. But it pushed me to learn English quicker, and I had a great support of, you know, those guys that play there already, Brian Helmer and, you know, the old guys, and Stevie Sullivan, Scott Pellerin, and the coaching staff. Robbie Vtorek was my coach there, and he was amazing, and the trainers. Everybody just, you know, I had no idea what I have to do to get a social security bank account, you know, driver license and everything. And they went with me. I was like a little kid, so they took care of me and helped me out unbelievably. And
just to be clear, Robbie Vtorek never threw a bench at you at any point during your time?
Not at me. I thought it was great.
It was amazing.
He backed up his players, you know, and it was a dirty, dirty, dirty hit on it was Jay Pandolfo.
Yeah, Pandolfo. Yeah.
Caught, and I love the emotions.
Yeah.
It's part of it, and if the coach has it, it's awesome.
When did you get comfortable with English in terms of, like, doing stuff like this? Because I know Artie Anisimov for a long time never wanted to be on camera because he wasn't comfortable, but now he is. Like, was it right when you got to Jersey, or was it a little bit longer?
No, it took a couple of years. Obviously, with the language, probably within 2 years, I started kind of getting comfortable that I can speak, and I was making mistakes, obviously, and been here long enough, obviously. Then with the TV, I was okay, and I was actually better speaking English in front of camera.
Really?
Or to reporters than in Czech language for some reason. I was very shy in Czech language because it's my, obviously, birth language, and people expect you to speak well.
Or, right.
You know, and in English, I kind of knew, I learned the right way to talk, and but to be honest, the most I got comfortable was when I met my wife. She was a TV personal back at home, so she kind of helped me, give me some pointers and how to speak, how to imagine, you know, when you're speaking to a crowd. And you know,
this explains
like
it. So. You had professional coaching the whole time.
Yeah, right?
Not the whole time, just a little bit.
We're an explicit language podcast, so I can ask this question. Did you know fuck before you came to the States, or did you learn the word fuck while you were playing in the States?
I think that's the only word I know. I think my first training camp, I was in a room with Rob Patterson, American guy, and all I probably could say or everything, my answer was probably fuck him. Because all I knew was I am, you are, he is, she is, you know, and all that stuff. But once somebody started talking to me, I threw it out there. Yes, it's no. So, trust me, my first couple of years, about 80% of the time, I had no idea what they were talking about.
It's universal language.
Yeah.
So you come up to the Devils in the 90s, and I always wanted to ask you this, because you are an outstanding offensive player, an outstandingly gifted offensive player. You put up incredible numbers, obviously franchise leader in all these categories. I remember talking to Scott Niedermeyer once about playing for the Devils in that era, and the question about Nieder was always like, well, you know, if he was somewhere else, would we see him as Paul Coffey or like one of these guys that it's like, you know, Bork or someone like, you know, would his point totals be exponentially higher than they are in your career? And I always wondered that about you. Did you ever feel when you were playing here? And I mean, obviously the success makes it a little bit easier to deal with. But were you ever looking, casting an eye at Detroit or casting an eye at Colorado and saying, oh, yeah, God damn, if I was on that line.
what did Nieder say?
I mean, he kind of somewhat agreed, but at the end of the day, I think you guys all bought in because you're winning.
Exactly. Yeah. And you hit it perfectly. And, you know, it's... We probably, you know, some offensive guys want to play offensive hockey, and it wasn't always that way here. And Nieder is one of them, especially, you know, I played with him and had a chance to practice with him, and it's amazing the talent he had, what he was capable of doing without sweating.
Yeah.
He changed the game. You know, he was like a fourth forward, you know, when he played with us, and it was so much easier. And I bet if he played probably on different teams, different maybe coaches with the different styles for a longer period of time, he probably would have different numbers. And I think that goes for all of us, the offensive styles. You cannot argue with that, because we were in the playoffs pretty much my first 10 years of my career, and you always had a chance to win. And you learn that it's not always about the individual, it's about what you prefer, obviously, and what you want to play. And you kind of there's a strength in the system, and we had that, and that's why we were successful.
So, having said that, with your numbers, maybe your numbers are still really impressive, but you sacrificed some for winning. Have you thought about the Hall of Fame at all?
I'm just getting asked because of this, obviously.
Because think about it. You lost a full season to a lockout when you were in your prime. You lost the other half a season, and you had the hepatitis A situation. So you take those away, I mean, you have 500 goals. You're a lockout.
Maybe.
Ah, come
maybe.
On.
Maybe not.
Two seasons? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you're probably like 92. No. Yeah.
I don't know. It's, you know, you have different guys going into the Hall of Fame that... you know, the community feels that should be there, and sometimes there are guys that we feel like should be there and they're not for some reason. So who knows what goes behind the decision?
They have to like you. It's a bunch of old white guys that have to like you.
You have to be Canadian.
Yeah. Well, that's why I went there for the exhibition game this year for the Hockey Hall of Fame game.
Get a taste of it.
I'm here.
Well, fuck it. Lindros had to become like head of the NHLPA before they let him in. Like, yeah, you got to do a lot of glad handing, I think.
But I loved it, actually. It was a great thing that I got invited for this, because it was, for me, I knew about some of those guys that were there during that week. You know, that played in NHL, their position now within the league and for the NHL. And then to be with them is just like, you know, again, like part of the team in the locker room, just absolutely normal people and you're having fun with them, and I loved it.
How serious was the hepatitis A situation? Was it ever really...
It was, yeah.
Like, was there a chance you could have died during that
time?
Well,
that's what the doctor said to my wife, not to me.
Oh, not?
He's like, obviously the third day when I was... I got sick, and I was already almost 2 weeks in Russia with being sick. And after that time, I flew back home, and my liver was still giving up and still not functioning. And they tried a couple of treatments, didn't work first day. They didn't try another treatment, didn't work second day. And they said there's only a chance to use a steroid treatment or dialysis, obviously, or something after that. And if that happens, then there's no chance that he can play anymore. So
Jesus.
So it wasn't really life-threatening. It was more career-threatening than...
Well, it was both, because then he said that month before I was there was a kid that was about 10 years younger than me and had a half the amount of the blood test, mm-hmm. and he didn't make it.
Wow.
So it's like, you had... By far, you broke a record with the negative things, with the numbers of the liver enzymes, etc.
Wow.
And showing how bad condition the liver is. But I didn't. I knew I was bad. I felt bad, but I didn't think about not that I won't be able to play, that I won't get healthy. Just
how did that change your mindset on life? I mean, going through something like that.
Yeah, it sure did. When you take 1 month in the hospital, and after that, you're not even as a professional athlete. I felt like I was in the best shape of my career prior to that, and it might have helped me actually to get over the sickness, because I was 28, I believe, maybe at that time.
Right about that, huh? Yeah.
And I was like working out hard because of the lockout. I kept myself in shape more than usually during the season here, because I was playing back in Europe and there's not too many games, so I kind of did all the extra work outside of the rink, and I really did was in shape, and I think that helped me to get over the sickness and eventually get back to hockey.
Wow. What was it like working under Lou?
Tell us a Lou story.
I see you have some facial hair. Do you feel free to grow it now?
Was he scary?
Facial, quite a bit.
Yeah?
a little bit. Sometimes. You didn't want to have him stare at you, for longer than 10 seconds. Like, oh, it hurts.
He must have loved you, though. You're a two-way player.
There were good times, there were bad times.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you didn't perform, if you didn't do things right, there were years when I wasn't happy with situation, ice times, etc. And I wasn't happy maybe that he didn't back me up at some point in those situations. He wasn't happy with me still kind of worrying about what I was supposed to do, and that's playing hockey.
Right.
So it's normal. It's a normal relationship, up and down. And it was very hard, very... tough on everyone, very strict, and again, it comes to how do you argue with that when you do have the chance to be in the playoffs on a yearly basis and winning the cup a couple of times and all that. So.
When you say he didn't have your back, do you mean in the sense that like you're there for the X number of years? In theory, my GM should have my back in this situation, being that I've been here as long as I have been.
Yeah, well, and that goes only for that one situation when I'm. And he always obviously back up coaches, because they were the people that he hired, and they work for him, and we were supposed to just do our job as a players, what the coach says, etc., which is true. But I wanted to be true to myself as a player, and I didn't like the way I was used and the way I was treated, and there was 1 year obviously when the captaincy was taken away from me, which is totally fine. And I said it was totally fine, but that's just the way it happened, that was taken from me, and I didn't feel like it was the right way to do it without them telling me anything, and the coach and maybe even Lou. And
how did you find out?
Through media.
Oh yeah.
Oh god.
And that was not easy.
We apologize on behalf of the media.
No, they just asked me what I feel, what I think about it, and I'm like, I don't even know. So that kind of like,
yeah, that's not great.
But that just shows you that, again, you appreciate more coaches when they do have the ability to communicate with you the right way, and not everybody has that. So.
Who was your favorite coach? Like, who do you feel had the best influence in your career, or who did you like playing for the most here?
I had a big in Robbie Vtorek.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had him in Albany my first year.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I made it to Jersey, he was the head coach here.
Yeah.
So he really gave me the biggest confidence and biggest boost in my career to start thinking about myself on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
And played me, you know, with put us with Jason and Sikora, the best line I've ever played on.
Mm-hmm.
And we had so much fun. So yeah. Him. Then Larry took over, and Larry was just fun.
Yeah, right.
Fun coach.
Players coach.
Players coach.
Yeah.
We loved playing for him, all of us. And later on, you go through some good coaches, bad coaches.
Was Lou a good coach?
He actually was way. He was different than a GM. He was, you know, from GM, he was very kind of strict. You know, not can talk to him, and you know, like very demanding, very. Just being Lou, but on the behind the bench, he was trying to be positive, you know, talking to you, hey, keep your head up, you know,
yeah.
Be positive. Like,
and you're like, who is this guy?
Oh, seriously, so maybe he would be a better coach, you know, we would have a better relationship if he was a coach, but no, it was great to see. Then all of a sudden, I loved it because it gives you a different perspective on him as a person again. So it's like, you know.
Did you know Jason Arnott was there? Did you know he was there on that pass?
I did.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Not absolutely, but I knew.
He was in the area.
He was in the area.
It was a perfect pass.
Yeah, sometimes, well,
yeah.
Sometimes it happens.
That what was the more raucous celebration? The 2003 or 2000 for the cup?
The 2000.
Yeah,
we had a.
You guys were younger.
We were younger, and we had a better. We had a. The way we played, it was just a better environment, better team.
Yeah.
More talented team, not better, but more talented team, and we just had so much fun. It just worked out.
People, I mean, you know, people always think about the Devils a certain way, but that 2000 team was there was a fuck ton of talent. And he scored a lot of goals that year.
Led the league in goals that year, yeah. I think, as a team, right?
Lost those 2 years.
Yeah.
Both years we went through finals. The second year we lost, obviously, game seven, but yeah, we had unbelievable talented players. We had,
yeah.
Scotty Niedermayer, speaking of him, he played on the second power play, okay? So that tells you something. Alex Mogilny played second power play.
Right.
You know, we had Gomer there, and it was just unreal, the talent we had.
Yeah. Does 2001 still bug you, 6-7 against Colorado?
Bugs me.
I wish, but, you know, I wish we would pull it off, and we... Because
Lou always says, I've heard Lou say that he regrets letting you guys go home as opposed to not staying in a hotel when you guys came back for six. Did you feel like that?
I don't know. Did you see how we played the first period? It was 15-2 shots,
yeah.
And we were
losing
1-0. So I don't think it had anything to do with us being home. Yeah. Honestly,
no, it's just, that was a loose thing.
You're trying to find something.
We all know what happened. The NHL fixed it, so Bork can get it. We got to wrap up with you, but I wanted to ask you one thing. You can ask something too because he's got many questions. Can you watch hockey as a fan now?
I love it.
No, but I guess my question is like when a director watches a movie, like that's not his movie or her movie. They're looking at the screen. They're like, okay, I'm looking at this as a professional. I'm breaking down the scenes. I'm seeing what the actors are doing. What I would have done. Can you appreciate a hockey game as a visceral fan experience, or does your hockey brain always be like, well, this guy took the wrong route to the puck or something like that?
Both, because you know, even when I gotta tell you, I don't watch too many hall games because of the time change,
right?
You know, or live games unless they're in the afternoon. But my routine is in the morning. I make breakfast or something, and I watch the highlights of all the games that were just played the night before. So I love watching it. So I kind of just see the good things.
The condensed version, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, whoa, this is unbelievable! What a game again! And but when you do watch the whole game, and or when I come watch, for example, back in Czech, I come watch some of the national team or the league there, and like. Jeez, you know, how could he make that like this? This is like, just keep going. You got plenty of time. It kind of, you do, you know.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wow, this kid, you know, just made it. That was nice. That was, he's, you know, he moves the right way, or he made the right pass, you know, or something. Like, he thinks the game right. So you kind of watch it as a fan, but at the same time, you kind of more detailed in it.
Do you want to coach? You ever thought about that?
Thought about it, was asked about it, and not yet.
No, not yet. What's holding you back? You feel like you're just not ready to do it, or you just don't want to do it?
My free time.
Yeah.
I'm just having too much fun doing everything else.
I guess my last question is, if you know this, you can tell us. No one's going to hear.
Yeah, it's just amongst friends.
Yeah, Sarah's cool. She won't tell anybody. Is there going to be another lockout?
Oh, why? When?
Like 2021? Is that when it's supposed to happen, when the CBA stops again? Like, do you get the vibe that...
I don't get any vibes anymore.
No vibes anymore? No.
I guess the bigger question is, how'd you feel about the NHL not going to the Olympics this year?
Well, now that I'm a fan, I'm not a big fan of. I understand the decision, but I'm not a big fan of the decision because I wanted to see the best players play.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a special event for not just going there to compete in hockey in that sport, in their own sport, but to experience the Olympic spirit and everything that goes with it.
As an American, having watched us against Slovenia this morning, I'm not a fan either.
I just heard the result. Are you kidding me? As an American, me too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Are you kidding me?
I guess that's the last question. You became a naturalized citizen. What was the decision there to do that?
I want to pay higher taxes than I
do. Oh, yeah. Shitty healthcare, higher taxes. Let's go, USA. Absolutely. And you're in Jersey, I mean, for God's sake.
Yeah, no. Both of my girls are born here in the States. They're American. They have both citizenships. I was allowed to have both citizenships, so I have Czech citizenship and American citizenship.
Cool.
And it's good to have options no matter what's going on in the world.
Was the test tough?
The test was tough, and actually it was great because I learned so much about the history, American history, honestly.
Yeah, right?
A lot of things
you
I
gotta
didn't
know.
I actually studied quite a bit. And I remember Mari Brodeur, when he went through, he's like, don't worry about it. Like, they didn't even ask me. I'm like, ooh, I don't know. And so me and my wife, we were studying the whole plane ride here the next day, and we were, you know, I knew it. I knew all the 100 questions, kind of. I got it down, and so did she. So we got 6 out of the 6 first questions, so that was fine. But they didn't almost give it to me, so I was there for 8 hours, and they almost didn't happen.
8 hours?
Holy shit.
It was not a good experience, but I'm glad we went through it, and it worked out.
Awesome.
Wow. One goalie to win a game. Marty or Dominator? What are you picking?
Oof. Well, I never scored on Dominic. I scored on Marty in a practice. But I'll say Marty.
There you go.
Good answer. Patrick Elias, you are great. Congratulations on your number being raised to the rafters of beautiful building
that
they have here
in
New York.
Thank you, sir.
Our special thanks to the Devils for hooking us up with Patrick Elias. And and maybe we'll do more interviews with retired players. I mean,
retired players are where it's at.
Yeah.
I think he thinks there's going to be a lock. Actually, you know what? The lockout question, I feel like he doesn't care.
Yeah, I feel like he really doesn't care. I'm glad you brought that up. I want to talk about that real quick. I was talking about Bettman with somebody the other day and about I don't think it was for our bonus episode. I think it was just another conversation.
I don't know. Say what you're going to say.
Well, I'm going to say
that if I was there.
The difference between the NHL and everybody else when it comes to work stoppages is that you're dealing with a massive amount of players, unlike the NBA, for example. There's obviously more hockey players than there are NBA players.
Mm-hmm.
So the NBA gets their labor piece. But, I mean, you also have a lot of players in football and basketball and baseball, too.
Well, NBA played a half a season like 10 years ago, too.
Yep, but I think the thing about hockey that makes it really unique is twofold. One, the players have abso-fucking-lutely no leg to stand on. They've got no leverage. They've got nothing. The owners have every bit of leverage in these labor negotiations.
Why don't they have leverage?
Well, I think that feeds into my second point,
which
is that for whatever reason – okay, I know the reason.
You just figured it out.
Yeah, I just thought it occurred to me. Like the lifespan of an NFL player, if you're not Tom Brady and you're eating stem cells, is pretty short.
It's like 3 years.
Right. The NHL is the second most physical sport, but has guys that play a long time.
Yeah, but it's still not that long for the average player.
Right, but here's the thing. They play for a long time. They make a lot of money. They're star players, what have you. So you have a caste system in these labor negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that are 35 and over, like Elias, they don't give a shit.
They don't give a shit about anybody between like 22 and
33.
They made
their coin.
Right.
28 to 34... they kind of care. They got another contract or two to make. They're getting paychecks. They don't want escrow getting them, you know. But their priorities are very much for themselves.
Everyone is.
They're not for 20. Let's say 25 to 17.
Remember how mad everybody was at Jimmy Vesey for exercising his negotiator right to do what he wanted.
So you've got this massive amount of guys that don't care. You've got this massive amount of guys that care about themselves and their peer group. And then you've got a massive amount of younger players that really would love there to be unrestricted free agency at 23 or 24. But no one's going to go to bat for them because they're not as important as the 20
7 to 34s who are the biggest stars in the league usually when we come to these CBA negotiations. Now, maybe maybe it swings a different way when you've got younger guys like Connor and Austin that are still going to be young when this CBA comes up. I mean, I think that, like, what if it's like 2020?
But they're going to have their gigantic.
Yeah, they're going to have their contracts, and maybe it's more of a contractual thing. But that's why I think the NHL always gets in these pickles, is because the players don't have any leverage, and if they were ever to try to create leverage for themselves, there's zero chance they're all getting on the same page. There's just too wide of a swath of different experience levels and different financial wants to get everybody to find solidarity. You're always going to find some group that's going to break.
So what you're saying is that the people in power are keeping the people with less power fighting amongst each other and distracting them with money, therefore not uniting and becoming a united front against the powerful. What country has that problem right now where they can't get anything done?
The best country.
Thanks, Sean.
Trail mix for all. What was that, President Leahy?
We're going to give trail mix to all the poor people. Thanks, President Leahy.
Down with global warming. Up with global cooling. I want to keep every state at a crisp 68%, 68 degrees Fahrenheit, rather. 68%.
68% Fahrenheit? Is that like a – that's not a Canadian temperature,
the shitty sequel to Fahrenheit 471, 68%.
By the way, bull fucking shit that you get to do the 69th Star Wars minute and I don't.
Oh, wasn't that great?
What? Fucking Pete, what are you doing?
Have you ever been on the Star Wars
minute? No. And I'm not saying I'm desperate to, but like if they're going to give out the 69th minute to either you or me, hello.
I'm trying to position myself as like the Charles Nelson Reilly of minute podcasts, where I just do every minute podcast.
Is that why you wear those big glasses all the time now? Because you're just trying to
Star Wars. I've done the Star Wars minute. I did the burnt thing, which wasn't a minute podcast, but was sort of like a bad movie podcast. I've done the DC movies podcast where I did Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice. I'm on deck to do the Titanic podcast, and then I might do a Buckaroo Banzai one too. So if you've got a minute podcast you want me to appear on it, I will appear on your minute podcast.
I will only do minute 69s. That's it. The fact that Greg Wyshynski was given minute 69 by a guest of this podcast over me will be a crime that will not be forgotten.
If you're doing the Hobbit Desolation of Smaug podcast and you're on minute, what would it be, 574, I'll come do your podcast.
Not me, though.
No.
Is that how you say it, Smaug?
I don't care.
I thought it was Smaug. That was a big plot line. And did you watch the HBO show, the 6-episode thing with Sharon Stone? What that was the name of it?
Oh, no, I haven't watched that yet.
Mosaic?
Mosaic, yeah. The Soderbergh one.
Boy, I hated the ending.
Don't tell me the ending.
It wasn't bad. I just hated it.
I'm not good with HBO limited series because I also didn't watch the Night Of, but I also know the ending of that, unfortunately, already.
Just watch the first hour and a half of the Night Of and then turn it off. Mosaic is good.
Do you watch High Maintenance, by the way?
I tried to get into it.
It's not a laugh out loud funny show. It's more like a character study. But one of these. Remember how they used to talk about like Seinfeld and be like, does anybody outside of New York really like Seinfeld? Do they get the humor? Do you have to be from New York to get the New York humor in Seinfeld? If anybody in the Puck Soup audience watches High Maintenance and you don't live in New York or have lived in New York, please tell me how you enjoy the show, because it is so fucking specific.
Yeah.
Like, the entire last episode I watched was about this couple who gets a low-rent apartment inside of a luxury building, and they're not allowed to use the amenities. And it's all about, like, apartment and townhouse hunting in New York. And I'm like, this is really entertaining.
What is the show about?
It's about a guy who sells weed, but he uses a bike to get from place to place. So it's like, it's an anthology.
Like it's not really about him.
No, it's an anthology.
Or about, yeah.
It's about meeting different characters each week.
Like, the one episode I watched, it was, like, an old Asian couple. You ever see that one?
I don't remember.
And, like, their son or daughter is, like, dating someone who's, like, a musician. And they're moving away because the musician person has like a job on like the other coast. Hmm. And I had it on for like 15 minutes and I'm like, what? Like, nothing happened. It was just, I'm watching it and I'm like, nobody was high. Nobody was like, there was no Seth Rogen like, drugs. Like, I don't know what was going on. I'm like, this isn't really anything.
I have to admit, the first time I saw it, like I saw the goofy dude with the beard and I'm like, oh, this is amazing. This is going to be like, you know, if Seth Rogen was a bike messenger in New York, but he's selling weed on the side. That's what I really thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it was not anything like that.
Oh, God.
the fucking truck hit me. Oh,
I need some brownies.
You know, like there's none of that. It's just like, oh, you want to buy some weed?
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. I'll buy some weed.
Okay, it's cool. A good show, but I if anybody watches it outside of New York, let me know if you dig it, because I honestly, like, it's so specific to New York that I can't imagine that people like it. But if you do like it and you want to extol the virtues of high maintenance or Mosaic or Divorce or Crashing or any show on HBO, you might want to do something like, oh, I don't know, build a fan site. And honestly, if you wanted to do that, there's only one place to go.
Where's that?
Squarespace.
It's a space that's a square.
If you listen to podcasts, you've probably heard about Squarespace. You're about to hear about it again, because support for today's show comes from Squarespace. If you want to start a new business, you can make it stand out with Squarespace. You can, with beautiful templates, build world-class websites by world-class designers. Squarespace makes it easier to turn your new idea into a new and unique website. You could showcase your work, you could blog, you could publish content, even sell products and services of all kinds in just a few clicks. If you had a t-shirt, because you like the HBO shows, it says, I'm an HB bro.
Say, Mose sick.
Yeah.
Because it's sick,
yeah,
bro.
You could put that on a coffee cup.
I need Mosaic.
Divorce. Eh? Question mark?
Don't beat a dead divorce.
Just say.
Boy, I got a lot of dead horse beating jokes in this episode.
You could sell all that shit on your website. You can customize everything from the look and feel to the settings and the products. It's all optimized for mobile right out of the box. Use Squarespace's analytics to help you grow in real time. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to install or patch or upgrade ever. But if you do have a question, Squarespace has award-winning 24/7 customer support that's there to help. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch your website, use the offer code PUCKSOUP, all one word, P-U-C-K-S-O-U-P, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com, offer code PUCKSOUP.
Just imagining like the Squarespace like customer service person like 3 a.m. like all the it's like a porn site. Hey, I can't get this Bukkake video to upload. Could you help me out here? I'm going to send you the clip. No, don't. We can't. I don't know if you can do that or not on Squarespace, but I'm just picturing like all the awful 24/7 late night emails they get.
Hello, Squarespace. Yeah, it's me, Greg Wyszynski.
Devil's Domain?
Yes, of Devil's Domain. I have a photo gallery of 25 Devil's players and the potatoes that look like them, and I can't get the photos to link.
So it's 3:45 in the morning.
I know! I'm on my fourth Mountain Dew, and I can't get it right.
Yo, what's up? It's Jason from Long Island. I got a Fire God Snow website I'm trying to get to upload here, and the GoFundMe's not linking out properly. What do I do here?
All right, we should talk about that. So Islanders fans are pretty engaged right now with the state of the team.
Engaged is definitely a word you could use to describe it.
Think
they're
about
engaged.
The roller coaster that is the Islanders fan season. We start the season.
I feel like the roller coaster's been at one level the whole time.
Clean slate. Maybe we'll do great this year.
Eh.
We're not good. Wait! Matt Barzal is winning Rookies of the Month. We're going back up the roller coaster. Oh, God, all these articles about John Tavares leaving. This sucks. I hope we get a new building to keep him here. Down this roller coaster. We got a new building! Up the roller coaster. But he hasn't signed yet.
You're just reappropriating the Vince doing the movie bit.
Down the roller coaster.
looks like John's doing the Long Island.
We're getting closer to the playoffs. And our owners are great. And what have you. Up the roller coaster. Garth Snow gave a press conference and he said that the reason we're not winning is because of injuries. But that's not. Down the roller coaster, all the way down to buying a billboard. So the billboard thing, if you haven't heard it, Islanders fans were trying to raise $2,000 to buy
a month's worth of billboard.
To buy a billboard near Barclays Center that was basically a Fire Garth Snow billboard. So they ended up getting well over $2,000. I think the last count this morning was like $6,000. They were going to donate the rest of it to Andrews Lee's Kids with Cancer charity, and then Andrews Lee is like, I'm an employee of this team.
You dipshits.
You dipshits. You're trying
you
to come up with a way to fire my boss, the guy who drafted and signed me and signs my checks. Like, I really can't be associated with this.
I can't imagine putting a stranger in a more compromising position than what the Islanders did to Andrews Lee.
Yeah.
That's just unbelievable.
It's like, we're going to create a billboard that calls for the firing of Garth Snow
And we are going to donate money in the name of Glenn Sather, Rangers president.
Like in football, the Bills get to the playoffs because of one Andy Dalton pass, and Bills fans give like thousands of dollars to this charity. Like, great.
Yeah.
The Islanders are like, we want to fire Garth Snow, the guy who gave you your opening and your opportunity and all your money. You mind taking like a couple grand from us here?
I'm all for fan protests. I love when people rent planes to fly banners over sporting events that are like fire whomever.
It's just such a waste of money.
I'm down with buying giant advertisements in newspapers. It's that feeling. It's like you take the fan empowerment of being able to boo at a game, and then you stick a syringe in it and pump it full of steroids.
Yeah, maybe.
And now it becomes a fire Garth Snow billboard.
Maybe just like take a step back and be like, Why does this matter so much to me? Why does whether or not Garth Snow has a job next year? Maybe you're taking it too seriously.
You can't do that. The moment you step back from the ledge, you realize that none of this matters.
Like,
you got to be all in or all out.
Like, Ben McAdoo could have coached the Giants for the next decade. At no point would I have been like, you know what I need is a billboard in East Rutherford that says McAdoo-doo. You know, like, it just, of all the things to spend your money on.
Listen, as a Jets fan who once participated in Joe Must Go chants when I wanted Joe Walton fired.
Like Rich Kotite.
Yeah.
Like more like Rich Koloose.
Is it because of that roller coaster that I just defined earlier?
No,
they're so triggered by all of this
I don't think it's that. Because, I don't think the season's really been a roller coaster. They went into the year kind of, like, not favored to make a playoff spot, and they've kind of been in the same sort of, like, wild card-ish below it spot all year. I just think this is, like, a decade of building of just, you know, every... And, like, there's also that weird sentiment, too, that, like, Garth Snow's good at his job. Like, every once in a while, like, I get a retweet where it's like, look what Garth Snow's done with...
I think Garth Snow's good at his job.
Oh, my God. Wow, yeah. Why? Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me why not. Has he drafted well? Yes.
Has he?
Sure.
He's picked in the top 10, like 10 of 12 years.
But Barthel.
What does he have? Okay.
I keep hearing Josh Hosang is going to work out.
You want to hear about the Nino Niederreiter, Cal Clutterbuck trade?
There have been some moments of great triumph and some moments of great disappointment from Garth Snow.
Del Cal, Ness. He's fucked up a lot. He's had a lot of high picks that he's fucked up.
Yeah.
If you give someone enough high picks, they're going to eventually stumble into John Tavares.
Well, you know, it's the number one overall pick.
Yeah,
stumble into that.
Right.
Although
he could have taken Duchesne, though.
Yeah. According to Newsday, he was going to take Duchesne, right?
That was like a debate that year. It was like Duchesne or Tavares. And I remember like not knowing. I still don't know fuck all about junior hockey. And seeing her numbers and just being like, why would you ever take? I don't understand, but I don't think you would ever take Matt Duchesne. But like, oh, man. I mean, Rick DiPietro was his. He want to go back that far. Like, he's had a lot of bad. Nikolai Kuhlman's not so great. He let Michael Grabner go.
So you think he should be fired?
He should have been fired a long time ago. Hmm. Like, he's... Yeah, I mean, there was a time when you can make the excuse of like, well, there's not a lot of money there. They're not spending, but...
I think that's why I give him kind of a pass in some ways, is because of everything that's happened behind the scenes through the years with him and the money and the fucking moving. What franchise has moved twice within the same city to different arenas? Like, there's a lot of like Islanders. It's really hard to like recruit free agents without like giving them an Andrew Ladd contract when you've got like a circus tent going on behind.
Oh, yeah. Them. Andrew Ladd.
Yeah. Well, you know, got to get someone to play with Johnny T, right?
You got to get, I mean, like, I don't know. It depends on how you feel about Franz Nielsen, but they kind of just forgot about Franz Nielsen. Like,
well, you couldn't pay. Really, that was going to be overcompensation. I think that was a good move. I think history shows that.
Casey Cizikas' contract.
I think history shows that Franz Nielsen and Okposo were both smart moves on his part as far as not bringing him back.
Like, he stumbled into an offseason where the Bruins and Blackhawks couldn't pay their guys because they had dipshits there, and they got Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk for nothing.
See, but that, again,
but
like,
that was because
how
of the timing.
Like, Ray gets credit for getting Marcus Johansson because the Capitals were dipshits and they couldn't afford him. You don't give Snow credit for getting Leddy and Boychuk that year?
Well, they were stockpiling picks, the Devils. The Islanders were just not spending any money forever. Then they finally had a season where they could, and it happened to be at the same time two teams were capped out and they had to get rid of guys. Like, it's not bad or anything, but like, it's just,
I think
strategy.
I think Garth gets too much criticism. I'll defend him a little bit. I think he gets too much criticism. I think that he is a guy, he's a tryhard. He swings to the fences and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But I ultimately don't think that this franchise is being held back by Garth Snow. And this franchise is being held back by a lot of guys that at the time, if you go back and look, people probably were fawning over some of the picks they made and they just didn't pan out.
Well, that's, I don't care what people were doing.
The one thing
also, the Matt Barzal trade. I mean, you win a trade with the Oilers.
Is that really winning a trade?
The one thing I'll say about him, though, that I agree with the Islanders fans about is this fucking nonsense in goal. Like, the Grice-Halak duo can be upgraded, should be upgraded, and has not been upgraded.
Like, but, I mean, but, like, who are they ever going to get?
Well, like, think about some of the goalies that have moved. I mean, like, Martin Jones. Like, they're Ben Bishop. Like, but Ben Bishop would be a better option here than Halak and Grice.
Yeah. I mean, if you're giving up 45 shots a night every night, though, like, really, what's Ben Bishop going to do? You know?
Would Mike Smith have been an improvement? Would Brian Elliott have been an improvement?
Oh, we can't sit here with Mike Smith. Everyone thought Mike Smith was the shittiest. Again, actually, this is a good point because Mike Smith was dog shit in Arizona for years, left, went to Calgary, and he's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Antti Raanta was pretty good everywhere he was. Yeah. Goes to Arizona, and he can't stop anything.
Would the Islanders be a better team right now with Marc-Andre Fleury? Yes. What is this? Are you Slovakian? Like, what are these Valentines you're giving Halak and Grice? Are you know, that just don't.
You know me. I'm more of a team guy in front of the goalie than a goalie guy behind the team. So Marc-Andre Fleury is playing behind a better team, I would say, at this point.
I mean, that much is clear with your support of Scott Darling.
Dude, Carolina. Fucking every time Cam Ward gives up four goals, the fucking Carolina fucking Hurricanes score five. It's insane. Like, Scott Darling gives up three in the first period, he gets pulled, they never come back. Like, Cam Ward just, like, spaces his goals out better when he gives... Cam Ward's at, like, 9:02!
Let's bring it back to three billboards outside of Ebbing Barclay Center.
Why do you have to bring that up?
I think this about the billboard. I think that...
Why no results, Chiefs, though?
I think the Islanders fans feel empowered. Remember when when Brian Burke was like why fire your coach now, Brian? And then Burke was like,
I couldn't help but notice the fans were all chanting, fire Randy, fire Randy. Well, some point, you got to fire Randy.
You're an idiot if you're listening to people drunk in your arena screaming about firing.
But it empowered Leafs fans who were chanting, fire Randy, to throw in their fucking jerseys. They affect the change. I think Islanders fans, by not going to Barclays, feel empowered
by not going to Barclays. So you think?
Why do you think they're moving?
No, but I mean, like, you think
they draw 10,000 a night in this place. Everybody hates it.
Yeah, but they're not going for empowerment. They're not going because they just don't want to go all the way out there.
They're not going because they don't want to go.
Yeah,
and because they decided not to go, they're building another arena in New York City. That's the amount of power that Islanders fans have wielded in the last calendar year.
It's
they
different.
Did not go to one place. The Islanders are like, fuck. Let's build a whole new place for you to put it closer to where you are.
Yeah.
That's an incredible amount of empowerment.
But there's a difference between thousands of people not showing up 41 times a night than 335 people donating to a GoFundMe.
But, like,
I mean, that's different.
But I'm saying that, like, I feel like this is the GoFundMe billboard is a symptom of the amount of swagger they have now. They got their team to build them an arena. Because they didn't go to the one they moved to.
I see what you're saying.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, imagine how big your schvance is after that. When you decide, I'm not going to Brooklyn, and the owner's like, they're biting their nails. We'll build a whole new place closer to you.
Wait, hang on. I'm imagining myself with a big schvance. Wow, it's great.
I see your schvance is as big as mine.
So that's the saga there. Again, I don't know how it'll all shake out. Maybe there's been a backlash against the fans by
he's not going
the
anywhere.
Usual water carrying people.
And also, like, if John Tavares leaves, it's kind of his fault, but it's not really his fault. You know, like, it's his fault because the team isn't good after all this time. But, you know, if 31 teams or 30 teams want to give you a bunch of money and they're in better situations, actually, I take it back. It's all Gartzno's fault. He should be fired.
If I'm the Islanders. Fans vis-a-vis John Tavares.
Vis-a-vis.
Here it is again.
I never noticed until somebody pointed it out.
It's a crutch. I'm worried about two places.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Montreal?
I'm worried about Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much worried about Montreal. I think...
How does he go there, though, and get a big fat contract and have Montreal still be good? Because that's going to be like $20+ million in between him and Carey Price. Like, how is that team ever going to be good if he
goes there? Short term. Short term window. You'll have the center, the defenseman, and the goalie.
Nashville. 3 years, $24 million.
I'm worried about... I'll tell you the other thing I'm really worried about with Montreal. Pat Brisson is John Tavares' agent. His best friend in the whole wide world is Mark Bergevin. And it got me thinking, why hasn't Mark Bergevin been fired? Is it because they think they have
an in? Because you can't fire GMs.
What?
Because GMs never get fired.
But do you think that it's because they think that they have an in with Brisson?
and to get Tavares there.
You're a Devils fan. I used to be a Devils fan. Who was Pat Brisson's big client for a long time?
Who was it?
Marty Brodeur.
Marty, yeah.
And every year it was like, oh, like not every year, but like towards the end it was like, oh, Marty's going to go to Montreal. Marty's going to, and he never did.
Yeah, but Marty was fat and happy here in Jersey.
Well, he was definitely fat.
Yeah, he was somewhat happy.
But John Tavares, like also John Tavares, the one thing I completely agree on is that he's not like a star fucker, you know, like he doesn't necessarily want to go someplace where it's like all about him. Like he would definitely like Nashville's a low key. What's your other city?
That's why I'm concerned about city number two.
Nashville.
Because they are clearly carving out some salary space for something.
Oh God, come on.
What?
Ottawa?
No, fuck. Oh. He's never going to Ottawa. He doesn't want to play in Quebec in 4 years.
Devils?
No.
Devils?
That's great, but I don't think I do believe that Tavares is a good enough dude to not go to the Devils or the Rangers. San Jose.
Oh, why would you go there?
Why wouldn't you go there?
See, this is like the Kevin Shattenkirk thing last year where I'm not smart enough to be an agent. I don't have the business lawyerly skills to do it. I'm like Charlie on It's Always Sunny. Like, oh, excuse me, bird law states that you should not sign with the Rangers. Like, that's – I don't know what – I have no use in there, but I would tell Kevin Shattenkirk, buddy, this is a really bad situation. Don't go there. Like, that's San Jose now. Like,
why?
You think they're going to contend for a cup in the next 5 years? Joe Thornton's 100 years old. They just lost Patrick Marleau. Joe Pavelski's also secretly
old. Are
you
trying to tell me if you added John Tavares to that team that you don't think they could compete for a cup next year?
Add it to who?
Like to Burns, Vlasic, Couture, Pavelski, Hurdle, Donskoy?
No.
Really?
Like they're at a point where they're sticking Brent Burns at forward. Like
Hurdle got hurt, that's why.
Yeah, but I mean like if one guy gets hurt, suddenly your best defenseman has to play forward?
Pull the thread, sweater unravels. I would be very worried about them because I think that they are clearing the decks for something. I think they're keeping a lot of salary open for something.
So you're assuming they let Thornton go after the season and then go
potentially,
John Tavares?
Potentially. I mean, if that salary space leaves, that's even more. You could add a couple pieces. You could add Tavares and something else.
That is probably the thing that will end up keeping Tavares here is that there's just not a lot of ideal places. Not like ideal, but like really, really perfect places to go. Like no matter where you go, it's like Montreal. Ooh, look at that roster. San Jose. Ooh, that's nice.
By the way, this two teams to worry about rant is me acknowledging that the Lightning are much more apt to figure out a way to get Erik Karlsson in than to get Tavares in.
I mean, they need Karlsson more than they need Tavares
right.
because they have enough forwards.
Yeah.
But like where, like Nashville, I kid about Nashville, but like their bottom six sucks. Like imagine you drop Tavares
up
there.
You're paying Johansson and Turris all that money.
Short term, baby. Tavares is 27?
What the fuck? No one does that. That's not the NBA.
Hey.
No one signs the one-year deal.
Nobody went to the moon until somebody went to the moon, Greg.
That's an excellent point. And according to this movie I saw once on Netflix, there are Nazis on the other side of the moon. It was a movie called Iron Something. And it was about a Nazi moon base. And they send a bunch of flying saucers back to the Earth to attack us.
What?
Yeah. Iron Sky, I want to say.
This is why I don't pay for Netflix. Yeah. I've never once heard someone describe a show on Netflix where I'm like, I got to see that.
Yeah, right?
Like, what's it about? Well, it's about these 8-year-olds that fight off demons and Winona Ryder's there.
What's amazing, though, is that like there's always an audience for it. Like, they just canceled a show where Kathy Bates was running a pot dispensary. And I was like, I feel like I'm kind of plugged into pop culture. I thought this was an Onion article because I literally have never heard of this show in my entire life.
Same thing with the dick investigation, that the whole drawing the dicks thing. Remember that thing on Netflix?
Oh, American Vandal. It was amazing.
It's real.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was real until like it was like 2 months out already. Yeah. I was like, wait, I just thought this was like a bit on Facebook. Like,
and it ended up being like this amazing show that's also poignant and wonderful. And,
was it?
Oh, God, it was great. Yeah. You should definitely check it out. So that's, so the Islanders fans are a strange lot, I think is what we're trying to say. That's very the lead.
You know what it is I would love to see a study on how being a fan of a team that's been shitty for a long time affects your brain. Like in Edmonton, you know, like there's like this weird like Stockholm syndrome where everyone just sort of agrees with management because of the 80s. Like here, it seems more vicious. You know, like they're more like out for blood. Like as bad as this is in Edmonton, no one's taking out a billboard to get Pete Chiarelli fired. Here in the Philadelphia was terrible forever in football anyway. And then finally they win the Super Bowl and like they were actually kind of decent about it. You know, like they tore down that the awning.
Yeah, the awning of the Four Seasons.
In my brain, I was like the anvil. Like that's not the right word.
They were hopping off of Jim Neidhart.
Right, like they still fucked up the city, but like But like Philadelphia fans before that had this weird like their response to the losing was, we're still awesome. Like, oh, three NFC title games. Like, like the Islanders are just, and plus the whole Tavares thing on top of that. Like, imagine if you were a Philadelphia Eagles fan and like you might lose Carson Wentz. You're just like, yeah, I don't know.
That brings us to our question of the week. We have more things to talk about, but we might as well tie it in with this conversation about billboards and such, which was that...
Oh, yeah, there's some good answers there.
Yeah, the question of the week was, what would you put on a billboard outside your team's arena today if you could? That would be, sure, the Eagles writes in, Phil Kessel's House of Hot Dogs.
The Matthew Shane one was good, too.
Miko 96 says, even in my dreams, I can't afford a billboard outside of MSG. Craig Gleason, I gotta find out what. He's a Hurricanes fan. This is great. A days since playoff appearance counter.
That's expensive though. You got to update that one every day.
Trey Doughty. This is it sounded like almost like Trey Gowdy, who I think is like someone in government, like a senator or something. Trey Gowdy.
Trey Gowdy sounds like a country singer.
Jeff Engelhart writes in, caring, loving home available for Ottawa Blue Liners named Carlson outside the Little Caesars Arena.
Yeah, there's a lot of good Detroit ones.
A picture of Mitch Marner drinking Mountain Dew by Adam Foreman.
What does that mean?
He's a young child.
Oh, Mountain Dew. Kids still love the Mountain Dew.
Russ Fort says, outside the ACC, pretty please, Lou, with sugar on top, fire Roman Polak into the sun. Do you realize that if you fired him into the sun, how long that journey would take?
And also, like, he would hit the sun from behind, and then the sun would sue, and then he would go to the sun.
Yeah, he would move like the Nostromo in Alien. It would just be this giant floating oil derrick in space that would slowly approach the sun. There's a good chance the sun might explode before Roman Polak gets there.
The sun would move out of the way in time. He's too slow to get there.
Andrew Williams, again, another Caniac, writes in, no Quebec, you can't have our team. Kevin Luss writes in, not even Andy Dalton can save the Sabres. Russ Ivanok, a Red Wings fan, writes in, outside of Little Caesars Arena, if you could read this, you're probably not in the seats either.
Oh, that's a bad scene.
Someone suggested outside of the Buffalo Sabres arena a picture of Bart Simpson with the At Least You Tried cake, which is pretty good. What was the Duchesne one you were talking about before?
The Duchesne one was like a quote that said, it was from Matt Duchesne, and it said, like, I just want to play playoff hockey.
Right.
And then you take that and you put it outside Pepsi Arena.
Jeff Baldwin writes in a picture of Patrice Bergeron with the caption, have you heard the good news? It's sort of a Jesus thing, you see.
Is it?
Because he's, yeah.
Because he looks like Jesus. Is mm-hmm. that thing?
Let's see here.
I don't think Jesus is French Canadian. Is he French Canadian? He has to be.
But Nick Follis writes in, hey, Ken Holland, so long and thanks for all the fish. Oh, this is the one from RF Dean. A picture of Duchesne with the quote, I want to play playoff hockey right outside the Pepsi Center.
I mean, Colorado's not a lock for the playoffs or anything, but still, it's funny.
A lot of fire Hollands.
Yeah, like Detroit is like the anti-Philadelphia, where everyone's way too angry about Ken Holland, considering what he did for two decades. Like, everyone's really, I mean, like, it's been coming for a while, but they fucking hate Ken Holland.
Finally, Vicky Foley bringing it for the Penguins. Going to the White House is a mistake, you hypocrites. No love, comma, a former fan. Ouch. Wow. Bring that fire.
You gotta edit that down, though, because the font size would be too small on the billboard for everyone to see it. Have to just be like, fuck you, Penguins,
you know,
comma, Vicky Foley.
Is there anything worse in life than when you're driving down like the turnpike and you see a bumper sticker that looks amazing and it's like it's giant letters that say, hey, libtards. And you're like, oh, I want to see what the rest of this says, but the font's so small that you can't make it out. And then you try to get up in back of them to kind of see it through your windshield.
It's like cuck you and your cuckiness, cucks. Like, oh, that's stupid. I can't believe I almost died to see that.
Hillary for jail 2016.
Cuck nuts instead
of
truck
wait,
nuts.
Sorry. An apology. One of the exit interviews on the Patreon was somebody who said that we are too political.
Oh, we are.
And this is, in fact, probably the first time we've talked about politics in about 2 months.
And you said Trey Gowdy earlier, who may or may not be an elected official. Sounds familiar.
Speaking of the Devils, Taylor Hall should be a Hart Trophy nominee.
Here we go.
Do you agree or disagree?
I don't know if we're going to talk about this. I didn't come in prepared for a Taylor Hall.
He's like 25 points up on Heischer. He's like a bunch of goals up on whoever's second on
the
Devils.
Like, having
you
25...
take him off the team, they fall apart.
But like having 25 more points than like another devil player isn't really that hard, right? Like, what does he have? 31? No, it's funny. The Devils this year are the bizarro Devils because like they can score goals, but now they can't keep the puck out of the net.
Yeah.
Which is Corey Schneider being out partially.
Me not played trap. Me give up goal.
Like Patrick, it's like Patrick Elias is like shadow coaching the team now. Like offense, just skate around and score. They just got Hischier instead of Nolan Patrick. That worked out.
Oh, that worked out really well. One thing we didn't talk about was the Phaneuf trade. Dion Phaneuf and Nate Thompson to the LA Kings for Marian Gaborik and Nick Shore. I'm Nick Shore that Marian Gaborik will get some ailment to retire in short order. I'm Nick Shore of that happening.
Do you feel like that was like predetermined?
Completely.
Or, no, but like I'm imagining like Pierre Dorion being like, trust me, once he gets here, he'll want to retire. he's not going to want to stick around anymore. It's not worth the money.
I love that idea, but I'm sure it was one of those situations where it's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I mean, I don't know if Pierre Dorion has the finesse of a Lou Lamoriello to have that era when I stamp my foot twice and wink, you will retire.
He just puts him in a dark room. It's like when the Joker's in there and Gary Oldman leaves and then the Batman appears and he's just like...
Kyle Dubas leaves and all of a sudden the lights go out and Lou's behind him, slams his head in the table.
Well... I've hidden my contract at Cicero.
Where's your contract?
You see, you're a bit of a freak like me.
Just the good GM, bad GM routine.
The thing is that like people were like, oh my God, this was such a blatant money-saving move by the Senators. I'm like, yeah. Their owner literally told you about a month ago they're just going to start fucking cutting salary because there aren't enough fans and not enough revenue in that building to sustain the payroll. So it's almost like he said something was going to happen
and
then it did. But congratulations, Encyclopedia Brown. You really sussed out the reason this trade happened.
But like everyone's like, well, now they have all this extra money for Erik Karlsson. But like you're Erik Karlsson. You're like, wait, so I'm going to spend the next 8 years of my life playing in a place where they're just going to trim money to pay me and then not pay other people? Like they're screwed.
I thought Travis Yost said it best. Like they have one shot of signing Karlsson.
Travis Yost said it best. Water is delicious. I like my pasta dry.
For those who don't know, Travis Yost is one of the best hockey writers alive, with the single worst food takes alive.
Just an absolutely diseased mouth. Like his taste buds, something happened. Like he burned them off or something, and now he just can't taste anything.
You know, a lot of people say that lobster rolls are incredibly decadent, but they've not tasted vanilla gum.
Connor McDavid is the boiled chicken of hockey. And you're like, no, he's really good. And he's like, yeah, that's what I said.
But he said it best about Karlsson. He's like, you know, they have to give him, you know, over $10 million a season. I think that's
at least
clear.
10 for sure. Yeah,
yeah, probably more. Probably Connor money, and they have to come at him with a plan. They have to say, "Here is exactly what we are planning to do."
So if you commit
to this franchise, you'll know in the next 2 or 3 years you're gonna. But I mean, like, it's not to say that he's gonna accept the plan, but that's the only way they're gonna do it. The only way they can do it is to max him out money wise and give him a firm plan on what they're gonna do.
It's all part of the plan. Like they're gonna put Erik Karlsson on one boat with explosives, and then they're gonna put Mike Hoffman on another boat with explosives, and then Eugene Melnyk's just gonna be like, "It's up to you."
But
one boat lives, the other doesn't.
That doesn't.
And then this way, he loses the salary of one of those two guys, and he doesn't care.
And then a retired Chris Neal walks over and takes the trigger out of Pierre Dorion's hands. He's like, "I'm gonna do what you're too scared to do," and throws it out the window.
And then, like, Brendan Shanahan shows up because he wants both of them. He's going to have them both live.
This city is going to show you what a good hockey town is.
Brendan, do you know how I got these scars?
No, but I know how you got these.
Do you think Hoffman moves, by the way, at the deadline? Mike Hoffman?
What does he have left? One more year after this?
Yeah. I think it's possible.
It's weird to me how in the NBA, the Cavs blow. They're just like, we're fucked. And instantly, they remake the team. And in hockey, I get it. Like, sometimes guys are rentals. You don't want to overpay for rentals. But there's so many guys technically available who have more than 1 year left. And still, what are we,
13 days out, 12 days out, and still 11 days out, and the guys don't move.
You make a good point, which is that we've never really had a point in hockey where at the trade deadline, it's always like, oh, if they can just tweak this one thing, they might be able to contend.
Meanwhile, it's harder in hockey because there's so many guys. I get it. But
meanwhile, like, everybody has 60 points. Like, you have teams where it clearly isn't working. Like, why don't we have more gigantic makeovers? Like, trade three key guys for the other team's three key guys.
I mean, I don't know the NBA well enough to know, but I know they have a cap too. But, like, maybe they just have more room to play with.
I never thought that to be true. They do things in the NBA that defy logic. It's like, we are going to sign LeBron James and Kevin Durant. We're going to give both of them the gross national product of Uruguay. And it somehow will still be able to fit under the cap.
I don't know how they do it, but it's fantastic.
Yeah, right?
Like, in
the
hockey,
NBA, it's fantastic. That was actually the slogan.
Like, the Phaneuf Gabrick trade, it's a hockey trade in a way for one team. But, like, really, it's about dumping salary. That's how all the trades happen now, is, like, you have to get rid of guys. You have to have a guy on your team. Like, Phil Kessel's contract was, quote, bad at the time. And now it's like, oh, maybe the guy's worth it. You have to have, like, a guy trying to dump money, and then you attach a good player to the bad guy.
The bad thing.
That's how the Ottawa will trade Gabrick if they trade him. They'll attach, like, a first-round pick or second-round pick. Well, they shouldn't do that, but...
I mean, that's also the Stan Bowman approach to general managing. And sometimes it works great. And sometimes it doesn't.
And other times you trade Artemi Panarin for no reason other than Brandon Saad. Brandon Saad's been fine this year, I guess. But
you trade Artemi Panarin because Taves needs a winger, and we're sure Kane can just do it on his own.
You know what it is? It's too much. There's too much kicking the can down the road in hockey. Where the deadline, we got, like, the Rangers. Well, we have Zuccarello and we have Ryan McDonagh. Ooh, teams should want those guys. Don't really make too much money. Well, we'll probably get a better offer at the draft. All right, you go to the draft. You know what, though? Let's let the season start and see if they can increase their value. And then, all right, fine. The trade deadline comes again. Well,
Chicago's got to find a way to get that Seabrook contract off the books. I don't know what it is.
Right. That'll be a trade that happens.
Anisimov's no move becomes a no trade on July 1st. You can trade him. You can if you can somehow find a way to get Seabrook off the books, they might have at least one more year of something if they can get those two contracts off the books and make the right calls.
Ready?
Go ahead.
Ready?
Yeah, here it is.
Seabrook.
Mm-hmm.
DeBrinket.
Mm-hmm.
Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
And a second. Who cares?
For Matthews.
For Lundqvist.
For Lundqvist? Because goaltending's the problem.
They need a goalie. And then you trade Crawford in the offseason straight up for Darling, and then we find out who was right, me or the world.
Oh, you were on crack. Yeah. Speaking of crack, Taco Bell. It's rare. People are always asking us food questions, and we actually now have an answer, as both Dave and I, in the last week, have sampled the revolutionary new product at Taco Bell.
French fries and cheese.
French fries with spice on them and cheese.
How does Taco Bell come up with these?
Now,
I don't know.
Let me hear your review first, and I'll react to it.
It was good. I just wish the dipping container was different because it's a very shallow container of cheese. The cheese is good. The fries are good. I would eat it again for sure. But, like, you need to kind of, like, break the fry in the middle and then, like, dip it sideways a little bit.
And they're almost, like, a little double fried. So, like, they're stiff. Mm-hmm. They're not, like, floppy floopy.
They're not, like, floppy McDonald's fries.
Right, where you can, like, swirl them around in the cheese and then create, like, almost like cheese spaghetti with your fries and then put it in your mouth.
Right. They're good.
I liked them, too. I think the quality of the fry was better than I expected.
Yeah. There's not a lot. It's a dollar fry, so you're not going to get a ton of fries, but it's...
But they're really good fries. The spice is fine. Like, it's a good... It's like eating Old Bay fries almost, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, you get it at Five Guys.
I still don't know what the, quote, Mexican spices are. Yeah, I feel like it's just Old Bay seasoning.
Yeah, it's Old Bay seasoning. And then maybe they put some cumin on it or something.
Is that technically a Mexican spice?
I use it when I make tacos. I don't know. It's probably not. I mean, I think it's part of Mexican cooking. Or they probably put like a chipotle, whatever the fuck, on it. Flakes or whatever.
Whatever it is, it's good.
Okay, here's the thing, though.
Uh-oh.
I like the fries a lot.
But?
I've considered now maybe bringing them into the rotation, the four piece rotation for Taco Bell meals. Get the fuck out of here with that cheese. That cheese is so thin. It's so flavorless.
No.
It's so not good. You need to throw some jalapenos or other peppers in that sauce. Make it more of a queso than a cheese sauce, and you might have something. But that cheese, like, it's just nonsense. I felt
it's
like
nonsense.
You need to get either some other condiment like a chipotle mayo or something that I can dunk these fries in.
Oh, man.
Or you need to upgrade your cheese sauce, because that is the big flaw in this right now. You're going from an A minus down to like a B with that cheese sauce.
Disagree. I think the cheese sauce complements the flavor of the fry very well. I think it's a good balance. I don't think you want to have the cheese sauce be too overpowering where you lose the flavor of the fry.
Well, I mean, the one virtue of the cheese sauce is that you don't have to order a drink because the shit's so watery.
It is
like having a big old glass of water next to you, cheese flavored water.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is a thin cheese sauce. I can't deny that. Yeah. But it's good though.
No,
I would get it.
I swap out the cheese sauce. You've got a big old winner. But as of right now, I'd have to give it a B. What do you give it?
A minus.
All right,
A minus for sure.
Once again, these two wacky guys are always disagreeing about things in life. Oh, they're at each other's throats.
I still don't understand why you don't want the Golden Knights to do anything.
We need Charlotte Wilder to come in and be our third host like she wants to be, and be the one who says, guys, come on, stop fighting.
But like, I feel
like the woman who's on the
I was going to say, yeah.
Fox Sports show.
Yeah, no, it's like there's a woman on the fucking shitty debate show on ESPN. You can't call it a shitty debate show
on
ESPN.
Do you mean First Take?
Yeah. Right. It's like Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Smith, and then actually, yeah. I don't watch it, but like it's the same thing. Colin Coward has like the lady moderator.
I'm so happy.
You can't use Charlotte like
that. I'm so happy that our industry is so forward thinking and inventive that they've taken what every morning radio show has and then just put it on sports shows, where every morning radio show has to have that woman that's like, oh my God, you can't say that, you guys. That's outrageous.
Is that what they do? I never watched the shows.
And now they're all on the sports shows. Oh my God, Jason Whitlock, you can't say that. Oh my God. Oh, wait, I guess that's Jason McIntyre on that show. He's not a girl.
Oh, is he the
he's on Whitlock
moderator?
And Coward show.
Oh, but I thought he was like part of the debate team.
No, he's like that plays that role.
Oh, he's like the guy that like announces the topic. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I never watched.
He's
these
like
shows.
Staff boy or whatever.
Like every show is PTI ruined TV. They had a good thing with PTI.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys have known each other for 30 years, being crabby about sports, and now that's like every show on ESPN.
Yeah, and I think the big difference is that, you know, those two guys had, like you said, a lifelong of chemistry, while other shows are just kind of thrown together. Let's put the two loudest people that we have together on the same set. And
it's 2 hours. First Take is like 2 hours, man.
Yeah.
2 hours. Sorry, I've been watching Scott Pilgrim a lot lately on HBO. Mm-hmm. I had that scene in my head. 2 hours.
Where I first fell in love with Brie Larson.
Yeah, I forgot she was in that. Allison Pill is so funny in that movie. It was a perfect movie. I can't believe that guy made Baby Driver.
I really can't. All right, that's the show for this week. Our thanks to Patrick Elias for joining us. If you are a Devils fan and you want to see his number get raised to the rafters, that's coming up soon. We probably should have looked up the date during the break, but we didn't.
I want to say the 24th.
Sure. And honestly, like, it's probably sold out, so.
Seat Geek. Just no more code. Soon. I thought you were going to do the Bane Seat Geek voice.
Oh, you Seat Geek, my friends.
I bought my tickets in the darkness.
I was going to say.
The banner was raised in the darkness.
Just go see that. Our thanks to all of you for answering the question of the week. And our thanks to all the Patreon subscribers. Patreon.com/PuckSoup. For $5 a month, you get 6 bonus things. Or just kick us a dollar if you like us.
We got some Gary Bettman related content next month. Already in the hopper.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil next month's bonus episode, but I'll just say that it is March.
And Gary Bettman is madness.
Is madness. So
we're Greg Golzinski.
You can find my stuff on ESPN.com. Just look for the NHL tag, which has disappeared at the moment because it's the Olympics.
Is that true?
But it'll be back. And then me and Emily Kaplan write on that all day long and do fun stuff. My Friday column, if you don't know, I've got a column that's sort of Puck Daddy-ish, if you missed the Puck Daddy writing. It's called The Weekly Reader. You can read it every Friday. Also, ESPN on Ice is my other podcast. We had Mark Lazarus on to talk about the Blackhawks and Mike Ruzioni on this week to talk about all of his former teammates selling gold medals to pay for medical bills and stuff.
What did that guy do again? What's he from?
He's from the second greatest moment of Al Michaels' career. The first being in the same booth when Chris Collinsworth went over the Zach Ertz play for the 100th time.
He's still mad about that. I love the stuff that sticks in your craw. a Zach Ertz fourth down
conversion. It's not the Zach Ertz play. It's the fact that there was pass interference on the 2-point conversion, and it never mentioned it to then talk about the Zach Ertz play again. Mm. It makes me mental. I'll be talking about this for five years from now.
And no one's going to know it. You're going to be like, yeah, sure, I remember that, Greg.
We'll find out Chris Collinsworth is the world's biggest Minnesota Wild fan, and he'll come in and he'll be like, God, I'm trying. We need to stop the interview. I got to talk to you about something that happened 5 years ago at the Super Bowl, man. But anyways, what do you have to pimp? Anything?
Let's go. Let's get out of here. I'm going to go pee.
Pimp a bit, butterfly. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Bog soup.